Hello, I'm Craig Francis, and this is number 0361, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0361. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Steve Kettman, who is the co-founder of the Wellstone Center in the Redwoods. That's a retreat for writers.
We stumbled on this amazing piece of land. It's about 4.7 acres, 4 miles from the ocean. We have redwoods on the property. We just thought this place is so beautiful, so perfect for inspiring people. If we can inspire young writers to really put everything they have into taking their writing where they can, and if we can also cultivate writers of all levels, including very accomplished writers, then, you know, we're doing our small part to try to work to keep this place that books have in our life and try to build on that.
Science writer Andrew Vazakis, the night sky guy, talks about the Juno mission to Jupiter.
This is actually only the second robotic mission that has gone into orbit around the planet. There are a lot of mysteries surrounding this largest planet in the solar system, and Juno is really designed to explain the chemistry of the planet. There's a lot of mystery surrounding that. The origins, the composition completely, and basic things like what is at the core of Jupiter, we don't know.
Ron Schomburg is the creator of the card game Trumpet, the art of the deal card game.
I come from a family of card players. We play cards with my current family, and I play with my friends. Love to play. It wasn't much of a leap to make the connection between all those games where you deal out a hand. And some games use trumps, and it really wasn't much of a leap to connect all of those things and think, gee, I wonder if there's a game where someone like Donald Trump, who always complains that he's not being treated fairly, could feel like the rules were kind of skewed in his favor so he couldn't make that complaint.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0361 was Craig Francis, the creative director at Kidoons. And you can check out their website at kidoons.com. That's KIDOONS.com, where you'll find all their work and news of some of their upcoming major events. So take a look at that website, kidoons.com. And thank you very much, Craig, for doing the guest slate on this program, a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. I gotta tell you, Craig is an all-around nice guy, a real sweetheart of a human being. So again, thanks, Craig, for doing the guest slate on this program. And as I mentioned, a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? And one of the biggest stories that's in the news, and I guess looking ahead to the future, the Darwin File is in the process of recruiting new technology in the hopes of improving humanity's self-pruning. Introducing Pokemon Go. Now, at press time, here is the first attempted salvo. Two men who fell from a seaside cliff north of San Diego told authorities they became distracted while playing augmented reality game Pokemon Go. Encinitas Fire Battalion Chief Robbie Ford said one of the men fell about 50 feet down to the bluff in Encinitas, while the other man fell about 80 to 90 feet to the beach below. Ford said the man who fell to the beach told San Diego County Sheriff's deputies he and the other man had been playing smartphone game Pokemon Go, which sends players to real-world locations to capture digital monsters. The man who fell 50 feet down the bluff was rescued by firefighters using ropes and harnesses. Sergeant Rich Eaton of the San Diego County Sheriff's Department agreed players of the game should steer clear of dangerous areas. I think people just need to realize this is a game, Eaton told the Los Angeles Times. It's not worth your life. No game is worth your life. Well, I have a feeling in a short period of time that last comment will fall on deaf ears. It's just a matter of time because, as you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning. Okay, according to arrest records, 24-year-old Brad Beard and 21-year-old Samantha Canopy got into a late-night fight in their apartment in Gastonia, North Carolina. The couple allegedly started throwing pizza rolls at each other. The report doesn't detail how the fight started, how many rolls were thrown, or what brand of rolls were used, a detail that local articles make a point of pointing out. Canopy was charged with simple assault and faces up to 30 days in jail. Beard was charged with assault on a female and faces up to 60 days in jail. Wow, if you end up with 60 days in jail for throwing pizza rolls at someone, I've pretty much got to assume they would have been pretty darn stale pizza rolls. I mean, isn't a fresh pizza roll about as dangerous as a Nerf ball? Yeah. Anyway, a couple who spent their first date at a North Carolina amusement park held their wedding in a sentimental location. One of the world's fastest roller coasters. James Music and Courtney Bryant said they rode the Fury 325 roller coaster at Carowinds more than a dozen times on their first date in spring of 2015, so they decided the ride was the perfect place to hold their nuptials. The couple said, or rather screamed, "I do," just before the coaster's big drop and exited the ride to cheers from friends, family, and onlookers. Fury 325, which opened last spring, is the world's tallest and fastest giga-style coaster, standing 325 feet tall and reaching speeds of up to 95 miles per hour. "I've never been so happy in my entire life," the newly minted Mrs. Music said. "It's been a long time coming, and to have it done exactly like we imagined, it's just so much more. It's like a dream come true, honestly. It's perfect. I was extremely nervous, but what bride isn't?" Minister Robert Hamilton delivered an appropriate introduction that James Music wrote before the ceremony. "Love has its ups and downs, its turns and plunges, but that only makes it stronger," Hamilton said. You know, a minister really has to have faith, pardon the pun, to want to perform a wedding on a roller coaster. And let's not forget, sitting behind the couple were the best man and the bridesmaids. And by the way, you can see a video of the nuptials. I put it up on Facebook on the Stuff File fan page. It's at facebook.com/the Stuff File program. That's facebook.com/the Stuff File program. You can go there and like our page and see all kinds of fun stuff, including the roller coaster wedding. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, firefighters in Tennessee say a local woman caused a fire after attempting to barbecue a brisket in her bathtub. Knoxville Fire Department Captain DJ Corcoran said firefighters found a woman fanning flames from her apartment and said there was a fire in her bathroom. Corcoran said the woman attempted to cook brisket over an open flame in her bathtub and called the incident a first in our books. Fire crews reported the woman lit a wood stove, a wood-burning grill, inside her bathtub and placed meat on a wire rack across the rim before the heat melted through the tub's fiberglass exterior. The tub and the brisket were a total loss, Corcoran said, and the apartment below suffered minor water damage as a result of the incident. Corcoran noted that 50% of residential fires occur as a result of cooking-related incidents. With that said, most all of those documented fires are in the kitchen. Yeah. Clearly, this is a case where the cook herself is definitely not firing on all burners. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Steve Kettman is the co-founder of the Wellstone Center in the Redwoods, a writer's retreat that brings people together in a tranquil and peaceful environment in the Santa Cruz Mountains to provide them with new ideas and inspiration, and also by publishing a select number of books through their Wellstone book imprint. To find out more about it, Steve joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. First of all, for those who aren't familiar, what exactly is a writer's retreat, and how important is it?
Well, this all started going back a few years, and I've been on with you before talking about books I've written, and I love books. I was a newspaper journalist in San Francisco and New York, and I put about 30 years into the written word. And maybe 10 years ago or 15, I started hearing so much talk about how books are dying, and, you know, before you know it, books won't even exist. And, you know, I didn't believe it for a second. I love books. I think we all grew up loving books, or at least a lot of us. And I argue, and I've been arguing, and Sarah, the co-founder of the Wellstone Center, and I both argue that, you know, books really matter more than ever, because with everyone's attention span chopped up and shorter and shorter and shorter, so many different distractions, so many different social media tendencies to discourage anyone from having a slow and articulate thought or emotion. What a book can do for you just by a novel or a nonfiction book, taking a sustained take on something, on a theme, that can leave you with something that transcends the moment in a way that no article can. So we happened to be visiting Northern California. We were living in Berlin, Germany at the time, and we stumbled on this amazing piece of land. It's about 4.7 acres, 4 miles from the ocean. We have redwoods on the property. And we just thought, this place is so beautiful, so perfect for inspiring people. If we can inspire young writers to really put everything they have into taking their writing where they can, and if we can also cultivate writers of all levels, including very accomplished writers, then, you know, we're doing our small part to try to work to keep this place that books have in our lives and try to build on that. So that's the basics of it.
From a writer's point of view, do you believe in the adage that everyone has a book in them?
No, I do not. Well, I suppose I believe everyone has a book in them. It might not be a book anyone else needs to read. You know?
Yeah.
So, and I don't mean that entirely flippantly. I've talked to people literally where I've encouraged them to even spend years on a book. And it might be a book that they share with a very small number of family members. You know, it could be a family history. It could be more personal. Very interesting point. I was approached by some people in Los Angeles doing a pretty high-level project where they go around with, I can't give names, but very high-level talent, the kind of names that, you know, that you would know, who are TV interviewers. And they interview people just to get their lives down, you know, on video, talking about lessons that they've learned, things like that. So I think that there's always value in that, but What I believe really is important are the kind of books that lift off, you know, that soar. If they were gliders, they would stay up in the air. And to achieve that kind of liftoff requires, I think, a combination of starting with some talent, starting with a lot of hard work, but then really putting years of work into it to try to get someplace. And so a lot of what we're about is really encouraging people to see writing as being, hey, it's the greatest thing in the world. It's the hardest thing in the world. It really can take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of disappointment. It's going to take a lot of days where you hate yourself for ever even trying this thing. But if you keep moving forward, if you see it as a long journey of self-discovery, then it can take you some amazing places. And that's what Sarah and I try to work with people to help them see.
So what exactly happens at the Wellstone Center, and how do you find your writers, or the writers find you?
Mostly they come to us. Our website is wellstoneredwoods.org. You can find us easily via Google. We have, for example, the Wellstone Center and the Redwoods month-long fellowship that we sponsor, that anyone who applies would be eligible, provided they meet the criteria, to come spend a month here at no cost to them and just devote themselves full-time for a month to writing, to taking walks through the redwoods and on the trails that we have. We have beautiful, lots of hummingbirds, and yeah, it's paradise here, basically. And reading a lot and doing everything they can to really jump their writing forward. We also have people who come for 1 week at a time on a week-long residency. There's a small fee for that. It's basically just to cover our costs. And then that works out great. A lot of times we'll have, let's say, a month-long fellow here and then one or two week-long writers, and they can interact. But we keep it small. We're very small scale. It's we have four rooms where visiting writers stay. And then we also at any one time have two resident interns, which is another thing. Any young people who, you know, post-college, maybe, you know, there are other options you're thinking about, you know you want to write. We have people come here, they take care of the goats and the chickens, and they water our organic gardens, and then they, in the afternoons, they really focus on writing. And there's a number of other programs we have, but I don't want to, you know, go on at too great a length.
Are there any kinds of workshops or working with other writers or anything that they can learn besides just being in such a tranquil location?
Yeah. So for the resident interns, for example, every Monday afternoon we have a workshop session that I normally lead, or sometimes one of our visiting writers would lead that. Every Tuesday night we have at 7 o'clock what we call open mic night. And there have been people in the past who brought, you know, a guitar and made music. Mostly it's people reading from writing that they've been working on. But it's a great opportunity for people to read in a very, you know, it's a warm, easygoing kind of vibe. Then we have author talks about once every month. We were fortunate to have Vit Nguyen, who won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction this year for his book, The Sympathizer. Very interesting book that I highly recommend. And Matt Gallagher, whose book on the having been in the Iraq War as a soldier in the U.S. Army, that book, Youngblood, did very well and got great reviews. And we had the two of them for our most recent author talk. So things like that are a great way to inspire people. And, you know, people look at writers who've had success, and it feels like they live in some other world, you know, that they're doing something that you or I or your friend who wants to write that they couldn't do, because it's just not going to happen to them. When you see these people up close, you see that, oh, yes, they do have some very special qualities. Clearly, they've worked amazingly hard and they're talented, but they seem a lot like you, you know, like us. And that, I think, is an important thing. On the one hand, to see that it takes incredible commitment and years and patience, but on the other, it's something that can be achieved, and that's what we help to show people.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you have an imprint. You have Wellstone Books. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we're very excited about that. That started out with a couple of books. Like we believe that if you get outside and, you know, go for a good walk where you clear your head, that's a great thing for any writer, for fitness, but also for, call it, balance or mental health. You know, Nietzsche was famous for, he would only write after going for a four-hour walk in the Alps or something. It's age old. But Bruce Bochy, who's the manager of the San Francisco Giants, he and I are friends, and he and I love to talk about walking because it's something that he loves. So we had him do a book for us by Bruce Bochy, a book of walks that has gotten great attention in, you know, the New York Times and California newspapers and been a bestseller in California. But it's just a fun little book that you literally slide into your back pocket and you can take with you on a walk. It covers eight different walks in different cities, New York, all of them in the U.S. currently, although we do want to add some others later. And then we have a Music That Changed My Life series. Two of those books are out yet. The idea being, you know, there's so much in the culture that's negative or reactive. Let's think about things that happened in your life that were really great, that really did inspire you. And for a lot of people, that's music. Dusty Baker, who is the current manager of the Washington Nationals, former San Francisco Giant manager, he was a young guy living in Sacramento, California in 1967 at the time of the famous Monterey Pop Festival, which was when, you know, Janis Joplin was there, Jimi Hendrix burned his guitar, an amazing concert, sort of Woodstock before Woodstock. And Dusty did a book for us about that called Kiss the Sky. These are shorter books that are a real easy read. And then we have one out now called Shop Around by Bruce Jenkins, who's an award-winning sports writer whose father was the great Gordon Jenkins, a close collaborator with Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, many, many others. So Bruce writes about growing up in Southern California, surrounded by, you know, Sinatra and all that, and then discovering Motown on his own, just falling in love with that music. So that's out now. And then we've just decided to start emphasizing California fiction. A lot of fiction comes out that people, wherever they live, in North America or really anywhere around the world, they're fascinated by California, whether it's surfing or whether it's Silicon Valley or whether going back the Gold Rush. There's just something about California that it means newness to people. It means trying out new stuff, taking new directions. So we have a book by a Vietnamese-American writer named Trami Nguyen Cron, C-R-O-N, called Vietnamese, which has just come out in the last 2 weeks. It's our first novel. It's been getting a great reaction, and it kicks off our fiction, and then we're going to be moving forward with that. And I'll use this interview to announce we're going to have a Best California Fiction collection, which we'll publish every October starting in 2017, so that people who just want to, you know, dip in and figure out what is some new stuff happening in California will be able to do that.
Sounds like you've got a lot of things going on at the Wellstone Center. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is wellstoneredwoods.org, correct?
Absolutely. And I also encourage people, my Twitter handle is Steve Kettman, K-E-T-T-M-A-N-N, at Steve Kettman. And I post things different places, but I try to keep people up to date on new things going on via the Twitter handle as well.
Steve, thanks very much for being on the program with us. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Steve Kettman, co-founder of the Wellstone Center in the Redwoods. You can find out more info by going to their website at wellstoneredwoods.org. You could also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0361, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, about the Jupiter mission. Plus, we'll meet a guy who's created a card game called Trumpet, the Art of the Dealer card game. Want to guess what that's all about? Yeah, that's coming up a little later on. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way, and we have a lot more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, 41-year-old Yolanda Tucker and 43-year-old Albert Jackson have been charged with aggravated assault after 35-year-old Shonae Davis spilled some dip at their home. After the spill, Jackson allegedly handed Tucker a knife and she allegedly stabbed Davis in the chest. Davis fled in her car but crashed and was taken to a hospital in critical condition. The police report did take the time to name the cheese dip in question. It was Rotel brand cheese dip. Now, I must confess, I don't really know my cheese dips, but that has to be one hell of a brand. I could see Rotel using this story in their ads in the future. Our dip is so good, spilling it is murder. Yeah. And federal law enforcement agents took over a case when it appeared that Google's headquarters in Mountain View, California, was being targeted in a series of attacks. Office windows were shot at, and a self-driving car was destroyed by arson. Reports say a Street View camera car was also targeted, but two Molotov cocktails failed to ignite that one. Security camera footage indicates the attacks were perpetrated by one man, and 30-year-old Raul Murillo Diaz of Oakland has been arrested as a suspect. Diaz reportedly told U.S. Attorney's Office investigators that he felt Google was watching him and that made him upset. Well, Google's watching all of us, isn't it? And later admitted to committing the two arsons and shooting into the Google building. You know, in the old days, they were paranoid of federal law enforcement agents. It says something that Google is now more feared. And if Raul was worried about being watched before, he'll now have a whole new level of paranoia to deal with, don't you think? Yeah. Okay, this story is kind of sad. Client Partners is only one of several Japanese agencies that supply rental friends, and I'm doing air quotes here, to the lonely for hours or days of companionship, tailored to the needs of the socially challenged client, with two rules, however, no romance and no lending money. A writer for a far travel magazine interviewed several friends in June, one of whom explained, "Japan is all about face. We don't know how to talk from the gut. We can't ask for help," said the female friend who offered a goodbye handshake to the interviewer. "There are many people who haven't been touched in years who start to cry when we shake hands with them." Told you it was a sad story. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we have a couple of stories up next that both could be entitled World's Greatest Lawyers, because how their clients are walking around free in the breeze is a major mystery to me. But hey, you decide. Story number one. Attorney Chris Dyer convinced a jury in La Crosse, Wisconsin in June that there was reasonable doubt about what his client was doing in a family's basement when he was discovered pants down, perched doggy style over the family's golden retriever, Cooper. Client Daniel Reinsvold, a stranger in the house, I may add, told the jury that he has an intestinal disorder that makes him subject to emergencies. Whatever that means. What Reinsvold was doing was apparently perfectly clear to the resident's 17-year-old daughter, who discovered the scene and reported Reinsvold was, quote, screwing Cooper. And a vet later said that Cooper showed signs of trauma. Nonetheless, Reinsvold was convicted only of trespass and disorderly conduct. Wow. That's all I have to say. Wow. Hard to believe it, right? But wait, we have a second story where someone apparently has an amazing lawyer. Story number two, attorney Lee Perlman finally earned an acquittal in June after two hung jury trials for his client, Danielle Goller, one of a seemingly increasing number of drivers who hit pedestrians but claim they were unaware of anybody being hit. Goller, who is 28 and is a trauma room nurse with no intoxicants in her system, had struck a 60-year-old man on a busy, heavily lighted Tampa street at 11:45 p.m., cracking her windshield, but drove on without stopping. "What does she think she hit?" asked the prosecutor. "A deer? A bear?" responded Perlman. "She's a scared girl in the middle of the night who doesn't have the life experience other people do." "Hello? She's a 28-year-old trauma nurse. How much more life experience does she need to know she hit someone?" Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy, is back on the program with us to talk about the Juno mission to Jupiter. The spacecraft arrived at the gas giant on July 4th, and it's just starting to send pictures back to Earth. Of course, you know Andrew is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of Star Trek, the official guide to our universe, the true science behind the starship voyages. He joins us via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So this is exciting news for those who are interested in what goes on in the heavens. The idea that we're getting more information from the gas giant. So what's the deal with the Juno mission? And have you seen any of the pictures yet?
Yeah, I mean, this is a mission that's been in the works for a long time, as are all planetary missions. They really take a lot of effort to put together, and especially the ones that go to the outer solar system. The payoff takes so long, right? The timing, because of the sheer distance that it takes spacecrafts to arrive at their destination. And I mean, just to give you an idea, I mean, Jupiter is 890 million kilometers away from us. It's so far that the radio signals from Juno right now, as we speak, take nearly 50 minutes to travel at the speed of light to reach us here on Earth. So whatever photographs and data that we're getting back from the spacecraft right now is already 50 minutes old. It happened almost an hour ago. Imagine that. That's how far away this planet is from us. And so despite that distance, I mean, Jupiter dominates the solar system, and there are many mysteries surrounding it. Despite us having about 10 missions already that have gone to the planet, most of them have swung by. Well, this is actually only the second robotic mission that has gone into orbit around the planet, and all the other ones basically just swung by on their way somewhere else, deeper out into the solar system. There are a lot of mysteries surrounding this largest planet in the solar system, and Juno is really designed to explain the chemistry of the planet. There's a lot of mystery surrounding that. The origins, the composition completely, and basic things like what is at the core of Jupiter? We don't know. We know it's a gas giant, but we don't know really what's at the center. And the origins of the planet are very interesting to scientists because it's such a dominant force in the solar system, Jupiter is, that it will be quite telling to scientists on what the overall origins of the solar system could be, and including the Earth as well, the origins. So Juno is really trying to crack open a lot of these mysteries that, even though we've been to this planet before, we have never really set up shop for long term. Like, this is a 20-month mission that Juno is. It's going to be doing about 37 orbits around Jupiter through the north-south pole of Jupiter. So we'll be looking at Jupiter in a very different way that we've never done before. Many of the swing-bys of Jupiter, literally Juno will be barnstorming the planet, getting as close as 4,000 kilometers above the cloud tops. And it's equipped with a suite of 7 instruments. One of them is a microwave sounding instrument. That's the most interesting for scientists, because this is a microwave type of sonar device that will be able to peer through the thick cloud layers of Jupiter and understand what's happening thousands of kilometers inside within the bowels of this planet that has always remained shrouded and unattainable for us before. So Juno is really going to be focusing on the planet and answering a lot of these deep mysteries.
Now, I think you already answered my next question, and that is, I know that the most recent pictures were captured on July 10th, and the images were taken 4.3 million kilometers or 2.7 miles away from Jupiter. My question was going to be, is it going to get much closer to Jupiter than that? But I think you've already answered that.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And the first image, I mean, it really shows you sort of like this, I guess you could call it a miniature solar system that's in view of Juno's camera. It's called the JunoCam. And this little imager is basically going to allow us to have very high resolution color photographs. And what was just released a few days after its arrival is really just a taste of what is yet to come. And they weren't even using high resolution on this image. So what you get to see are the atmospheric features on Jupiter, including the very famous Great Red Spot, which is a hurricane that's been raging for three centuries, twice the size of Earth, is visible on that initial image. And also you get to see three of the largest moons of Jupiter. I think the ones that are there are Europa, Ganymede, and Io, or something like that. I think those are the ones that are visible in that image. These are not the highest resolutions. Those are going to be coming in about a month's time. So this is just to whet everyone's appetite, showing what's yet to come and where the new home of Juno is going to be. And it's getting people really excited because it's a new viewpoint. That picture is actually showing us Jupiter as we've never seen the planet before. And you can actually see they've released a movie that stitching together multiple pictures showing the movements of the moons around Jupiter very clearly. So it's a fascinating view, something that humans have never gotten before. And you have to remember, Galileo, our famous Italian astronomer, back in 1609 was the first person ever to see these moons through his primitive, newly invented telescope. When he pointed that newly invented telescope for the first time towards the heavens in 1609 is when humans first saw these moons of Jupiter. And now we're getting, Juno's giving us a whole brand new view that no human has ever seen before.
Do you anticipate, like with so many probes that have gone into the heavens in the last little while, that what will be discovered by Juno will be facts and figures that will dispel theories that have been around for a while?
It could very well be. I mean, some of the more interesting stuff will involve the idea of water. There are theories that say Jupiter is a large reservoir of water, and of course, water is interesting to science astronomers because it's one of the key ingredients for life as we know it here on Earth. And so, for us to be able to find it on neighboring planets, that's something that's of keen interest because it could allow us to speculate that if Jupiter has a lot of water, gas giants like Jupiter, some gas giants may actually have habitable environments potentially. Also, water may be much more common in the universe in formation of planets than we thought before. So finding potentially habitable worlds may be something much more common than we had thought when we're hunting them, something to expect more often. So that's just one small aspect. Other things that are tied to our own planet's history and ecology, for instance, auroras, northern lights that are visible here on Earth so much, also occur on Jupiter. But we are not quite sure exactly what the mechanism is of how Jupiter has its northern lights. In fact, just a few weeks ago, a week or two before Juno arrived, Hubble was put into action. The Hubble Space Telescope took a wonderful picture showcasing a very large, extensive, glowing aurora, sort of donut-shaped aurora, sitting right on top of the northern pole, polar region of Jupiter. And this is something fascinating, is what is the mechanism that's actually allowing this to occur? It has something to do with the magnetosphere of Jupiter. It's very strong, and the atmosphere as well. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of answers Juno does come up with. It'll impact definitely our books and probably rewrite some of the chapters in our textbooks related to Jupiter and beyond.
Interesting indeed. One very quick question, we've got about 30 seconds, and it's basically related to what you're saying. Everything we seem to want to find out about other planets is basically to answer questions about our own. I don't think we've ever discussed this, and it's just a yes or no question, basically. Are the planets in our solar system roughly the same age, or are some older than others?
They roughly are the same age. That's our current theory. They formed from the same nascent cloud about 4.5 billion years ago. It was one disk of material that surrounded our young newborn sun. And they coalesced into larger chunks, sort of grew gravitationally collapsing on themselves into larger and larger material that eventually formed planets. Then the leftover materials beyond the planets formed the primitive moons. And then after once all of those were formed, the large planets swept up those basic pieces, and we see the solar system as it is today, with an asteroid belt, comets flowing by. These are the relics of the ancient solar system. And then planets like Jupiter are the ones that are really sort of the ancient archaeological sites that astronomers are just, you know, just really salivating to dig into. That's what Juno's going to let us do.
Sort of like the Swiffer sweeper of the universe. Andrew, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us once again, sir.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. Thank you.
Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy, and author of Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, The True Science Behind the Starship Voyages. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0361. And you'll find links to Andrew's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. As I was waiting to be interviewed in the studio of a major TV network recently, I noticed something was different than usual. There were no college interns. They're usually everywhere, so I asked where they were and was told that the network cut back on offering internships after a judge ruled that all interns at private companies must now be paid. A couple of years ago, I predicted this would happen after two students sued a movie studio that had given them unpaid internships. Interns have also sued talk show hosts, magazines, and many others, claiming that they should have been paid. Charlie Rose had to pay nearly $250,000. Even though thousands of college students have volunteered for unpaid internships in the past so they could get valuable experience and contacts, the judge ruled in favor of the students who sued. So, after being forced to pay interns, many workplaces simply eliminated those positions. Let's be fair, the students who filed that lawsuit said they just wanted to be paid. But what they did wound up penalizing thousands of other students who wanted the experience more than the money. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The fifth dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about a new card game called Trumpet. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. But I've got one more Stuff File news story I want to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. So we'll get right to it, shall we? Court documents show the Pennsylvania State Police have paid $195,000 to settle a lawsuit filed by a New York man who spent 29 days behind bars as troopers mistook homemade soap for cocaine. Alexander Bernstein's attorney, Joshua Carrolly, said his client also has settled claims against Safariland LLC, the company that produced the allegedly faulty drug test that troopers used during a November 2013 traffic stop. Details of that settlement weren't available. Bernstein was a passenger in a Mercedes-Benz that police pulled over for speeding near Allentown. Troopers smelled marijuana, searched the car, and found packages the driver said was homemade soap, but tested as cocaine. Lab tests later showed it was soap. Well, I guess this guy has cleaned up in more ways than one, right? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? The Wild 2016 presidential campaign has inspired a new card game that captures the colorful personality of the haystack-haired GOP nominee. Trumpet, the art of the dealer card game, combines familiar elements of classic trick-taking games that uses trumps, like bridge and spades, with a dash of crazy eggs-like unpredictability. The game was created by Ron Schaumburg, and Ron is on the line with us right now from New Jersey. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So you created this game, how long ago, and what period of the process during the primaries did you say, I've got a game, I'm doing this?
Well, it was kind of smack dab in the middle of it back in February. I would say that, I mean, you named a couple of card games there. I come from a family of card players. We play cards with my current family, and I play with my friends. Love to play, and it wasn't much of a leap to make the connection between all those games where, you deal out a hand, and some games use trumps, and it really wasn't much of a leap to connect all of those things and think, gee, I wonder if there's a game where someone like Donald Trump, who always complains that he's not being treated fairly, could feel like the rules were kind of skewed in his favor, so he couldn't make that complaint. And I'll be honest with you, I literally had a dream one night where I came up with the basic idea of the game, which was that trumps, the Trump suit, changes with every trick. You play four cards, each of there's four players, everybody plays a card, that's a trick, and the Trump suit changes every time you play a trick. In bridge, the Trump stays the same for each hand. Spades, the Trump suit of spades through the whole game. But in this game, it changes. So the idea became, how do you create a game where you can kind of enter the mindset of this wild and crazy guy and create a game that he might actually enjoy playing? As I like to say, it's a game for four people, and that means if you're Donald Trump, you can play, it's a family game. You can play with you, your wife, and two of your exes.
Now, you say it's a game that he might enjoy playing, but I think we've learned through the course of this political campaign that he doesn't really have a sense of humor or a thick skin. Is he aware of the fact that you have created this game? Because, you know, he does like to sue people.
Well, I'm a little disappointed that we haven't heard from him. I was sort of hoping this would become the house game at Mar-a-Lago down there in Florida, that everybody would be playing it. As you probably are aware, you alluded to, he's been involved in 3,500 lawsuits over the case of his career. And I felt a little bad about that, only because our game has four suits, the standard four suits in a card deck. But I'm thinking of going into a second edition of the game where we would figure out a way where we could have 3,500 suits. Of course, that's going to pose a few logistical problems in the production, but we're looking into that because I think a suit involving this game would be an honor. I'd be pleased if we could rise to the level of his attention, that he paid attention to us. That would be great.
Speaking of attention, I first got wind of this card game back in May when there was a press release about it that came out in the news. What kind of attention are you drawing, or have you drawn since you came up with this game?
Well, you know, there's always room to grow. Let's just put it that way. We're hoping to get the word out and that people can enjoy this. We like to say that this is a great game for any activity. It could be boys' night out or a picnic or as I like to say, that shakes up that dull political party. So if anybody's having a convention watching party next week or in a couple of weeks when the Democrats are playing, this would be a great game to play while one of those boring speakers is up there droning on and on. This would give you something to do while that's unfolding.
Let's talk about what you physically get when somebody buys the game, and what does it cost?
It's a cheap shot at $12.95. All the fun you can have in a small package. It comes in, I like to call it the keepsake collectible metal box. It'll last forever. You get a card deck, but I like to say that since jokers are a big part of the game, you have to use the jokers to play, then you use 54 cards instead of 52. So we like to say Trumpet has a big deck. You also get these tokens that identify if you are the dealer. We call him the big dealer in this game. And because we figured Donald doesn't really mess with manual labor, physical labor, that kind of stuff, we decided that one of the players should be responsible for handling all the shuffling and all the scorekeeping, all that, the bookkeeping and accounting stuff. So that player is called the apprentice. So every game of Trumpet, you have an apprentice who takes care of the hard work.
Okay.
So you get the tokens, you get a score sheet, you get the rules, which are kind of, we hope they're pretty amusing. One thing about them is we don't use politically correct language. We don't say he or she. We don't say they. We say he. We just use the male pronoun. And, you know, in this day and age where political correctness is suspect, we don't go that way.
Okay.
So we got the rules. And for those of you, we like to call them the low information players, those who don't want to read all the rules. There's a game at a glance that cuts to the chase and gives you the rules in a very short form.
Now, about the deck about the deck of cards themselves, there's something special about them too. They don't look like the standard deck of cards per se, right?
They don't. You picked up on that. Yeah, we thought that in honor of our inspiration, that instead of having the red suits, diamonds and hearts, instead of having those printed in red, we thought it'd be fun to have them printed in what we call the glorious trumpet orange. So those suits are in orange, and that gives you a reminder every time you play a card of who the inspiration was for this game.
Now, you say you haven't heard from Donald Trump yet, but have you sent a copy of the game his way?
I have not done that directly, although the Republican headquarters has been sent some copies, as have the Democrats. This is a game for everybody. You can play all across the spectrum. It's all in fun. But I think Donald's been a little busy keeping his head above water in the days leading up to the convention. He probably doesn't have time to play games other than the political games that he's been playing since he entered this race.
Now, since you've created this game and you're hoping to sell quite a few of them, would it be better for you if Donald Trump became president or not? Would that help sales or would it not help sales?
Would it be better for us if he became president? Well, that's a pretty loaded question. If you're just talking about financially, well, I suppose it would give some life to the game, and we might have 4 years of ever-increasing sales, but that's kind of a dodgy preposition. By the way, it occurred to me, you're up in Canada, I believe. You're
that
speaking
is correct.
To me from Montreal.
Yes.
I think I heard somewhere that while Trump wants to build a wall if he gets elected, I heard Canada, if he gets elected, wants to build its own wall to keep people like people from America flooding north. I don't know if that's in your government's plans.
No, so far not yet. But you know, it's still early. It's still early. So I happened to check out your website, and the website is trumpetcardgame.com, and on the website is all the explanation you really need, by the way, with an amazing 3-minute video. Who are all those people in the video?
Those are the top actors in the country. We recruited from coast to coast, north and south. No, they're actually just friends, neighbors, relatives, and I play a cameo role in there. Just a bunch of people who got together one day to have a little fun.
I urge people to go and take a look at the video. It is a lot of fun. By the way, what is your day job? I'm assuming this is not it.
It's not. This was just something I wanted to do because I believed in it, and I thought the concept was really good. Everything kind of held together with all the Trump puns that you can make. Didn't get a chance to say, but when the dealer deals the cards, he deals all of the cards to himself first. That's the rule. The dealer gets to take care of himself first. So he gets what we call the big hand. So the trumpet, the dealer gets a big hand. I kind of actually lost the point of your question. Could you repeat it?
What is your day job?
Day job, sorry. Yeah, I've forgotten it because I've come home already. I'm a medical writer. I do medical education for clinicians, physicians, and nurses.
Well, you've definitely got one thing from the Trump playbook, and that is you've created something, and that shows the entrepreneurial spirit. So that's something I'm sure Donald Trump would be very, very proud of.
Well, I would hope so. There's talk, you know, if he did decide to pay attention and wanted to shut me down, I would think, I thought you were in favor of the small businessman and the guy who's, you know, trying to make it on his own. But, it's just a little effort to actually have a little fun. People can go a little crazy during these events. And obviously tensions can run pretty high and feelings run very deep. I think there's a lot of well-meaning people who, you know, believe very sincerely in their values, and they want to see those practiced at the highest levels of government and shared by the whole community. So it can get a little testy. But I think a game like this, it's really just meant to have a little fun, try to get into the mindset of this this crazy election, and look at it from another perspective and hopefully get a chuckle out of it.
People can find out more information about the game by going to trumpetcardgame.com. Ron, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Peter, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Ron Schomburg, creator of Trumpet, the art of the dealer card game. Again, you can find out more info by going to their website, trumpetcardgame.com. That's trumpetcardgame.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0361, and you'll find the link. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
When a man tried to steal a boat at a waterside restaurant in Stuart, Florida, he made several mistakes. First, the 23-foot boat's owner saw him. Second, the boat's owner is a retired police officer who moved quickly to capture him. And third, the owner was able to capture him because the thief didn't get very far. He hadn't realized the boat was still tied to the dock. 42-year-old Jimmy Schumann was arrested and charged with grand theft of a boat and battery on a law enforcement officer. And by the way, Jimmy has a previous arrest for carjacking, but didn't get away because he couldn't drive a stick. Okay, rule number one in the theft of a moving vehicle: know that it's not tied down and know how to drive it. Because if you don't follow those simple rules, well, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0361. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0361. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.